In the studio this morning, I have Kath Dewar, Managing Director of KD Consulting, a marketing professional with 20 years' experience at the forefront of the industry here and in the UK, and she's a tutor on how to market sustainability at the University of Auckland. Her website is kdconsulting.co.nz. So, kia ora, Kath.
Tēnā koe, Tim. Thanks for having me in. It's great to be here.
Kath, we're only too familiar with the word whitewash, where some organisation does something that seems unethical, but the organisation charged with taking them to task finds them instead not guilty, and they do not have to answer for their bad behaviour. So, what do you define as greenwash?
Well, Tim, greenwash is a term that we use when advertisers make environmental claims that aim to mislead, exaggerate, or distract people, usually overstating the case of the good effect they have on the environment in some way.
And this is predominant everywhere. This is a Western phenomenon, isn't it?
It's certainly been quite prevalent in advertising in Europe and in the States over the last few years. So friends of mine up in the UK, when I was up there on a visit recently, were very familiar with the term greenwash and used it to analyse and to compare advertising of environmental and social claims quite actively. But it's not so widely known here yet, and that's a good thing. Most New Zealand companies have erred on the side of caution here most of the time, but we are starting to see it creep in, and there have been some quite high-profile claims of greenwash made to the Advertising Standards Authority, and the Commerce Commission in New Zealand has made some very strong guidelines which really try and keep New Zealand advertisers doing the right thing. So we've got some great tools that we can use.
And you feel that they can be effective?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a really good case here of someone who complained to Saab about a car ad that they were running, and in the ad, Saab were claiming that the whole Saab range was green, and when you actually dug inside it, it turned out they were planting trees to offset the emissions from each car during its first year of running. So what they'd done is not actually looked at the whole footprint of the Saab range at all. And under our New Zealand advertising standards, you can't do that. If you're making environmental claims, they have to be very robust and they have to be backed up properly, which is great because it means that members of the public who see ads which make big blanket comments like environmentally friendly have got somewhere to go. They can go to asa.gov.nz and they can make a complaint.
That's very good because I know that I've always looked at washing powders and I see biodegradable, biodegradable, biodegradable on all of them, but it's just like a throwaway word on a lot of these packages. And I don't really see these companies really showing anything else or doing anything else to be environmentally benign other than having these words, say, on the packet.
Well, there's a real range of products available for doing your laundry in New Zealand, and some of those products do less harm than others, and you'll get the more reputable companies like the EcoStore who will try very hard that the impact of what they do is minimal. You're always going to have some impact with using a combination of mixture to clean up your laundry, but they're certainly heading in the right direction and work very hard with what they do, whereas you have some companies who have a highly manufactured range of ingredients in their powders and who aren't very careful of what happens to the water stream as a result. So increasingly consumers are showing their preferences, and that's why we've been seeing companies like EcoStore with such rapid growth and the supermarket stocking those products more and more because people want to buy them.
And of course this is where the power is for the consumer, or I don't like that word, but for the people to be able to make sure that wherever you buy to have a look at the company's ethical standards, right practice, are they here for the benefit of the community?
Absolutely, and research suggests that about a third of us in New Zealand now form into what the advertising industry calls in its jargon LOHAS, which stands for Lifestyles of Health and Sustainability. So there's about a third of us who are making ethical and environmental considerations an important part of our purchasing. What a lot of us are finding, though, is that there's not great information available. So, for example, Good Magazine, who are, I think you might have had one of the team from Good on the radio recently, they're doing some great work as a lifestyle magazine for people who do care about these things. They found that the adverts that they run are tending not to provide enough information for people wanting to make a purchasing decision. So they've been looking at how they can improve that with their advertisers going forward. So people are wanting more information. They're wanting organisations to belong to the appropriate certification bodies. So if you've got organic components in your produce, look at investigating getting BioGrow certification for that. If you're sourcing ethically, look at making your products fair trade certified. There's a whole range of different organisations that people can belong to depending on what sector they're in to actually demonstrate what they're doing. The certification is only a part of it. One of the things I'm excited about is the big opportunity that marketers have to create real change within their organisations, not just tinker with the advertising.
Very good.
So greenwash will often come in a range of different ways. So things that people can look out for greenwash, before we leave that this morning, are greenwash which uses over-the-top claims. So the classic one is, in New Zealand, if anything is saying an absolute claim like it's environmentally friendly, beware. They would have to demonstrate that their existence had a net positive benefit to the planet, and the advertising standards say you can't make those blanket claims. So that's a really good case to go to the asa.gov.nz website and to register a concern. You need the details of the ad and put those details in, and they'll then follow it up. They'll approach the advertiser and ads get changed. So Saab, with that example I mentioned earlier, they had to change their advertising and their website to move away from making that. Ford at the moment are running adverts claiming clean diesel. I suspect that falls foul of the ASA guidelines, and I'm going to have a look at my complaint about those ads, because they could quite legitimately say that their diesel was cleaner if they've got the evidence to back it up. But let's face it, Tim, burning diesel isn't absolutely clean, no matter how well you do it. There's always some impact in terms of particles and in terms of emissions, which are harmful to our environment. So advertisers need to be really careful, and they need to be informed about what they can and what they can't say. Because at the end of the day, it can have a big negative backlash on your company. I have to say it's a bit of a shame at the moment, because organisations are doing some really good work, like BNZ have supported the Kiwis for a long time, Kiwi Recovery Programme, and Westpac are doing some great initiatives with their staff, with beach cleanups, for example. But those good small initiatives are totally undermined, in my view, by the organisation's failure to pay the taxes that they owe the New Zealand public. And they've been found guilty of tax avoidance, and instead of paying up, they're looking to appeal those cases. And I think both are approaching $500 million that they owe. There's a lot of money at stake. And if they were actually to pay those taxes, it would actually fund a lot of beach cleanup and Kiwi recovery work. So you kind of have to look at those organisations who I know are trying to do good things in a small way and go, well, until you get the big picture right, until you pay your taxes that you owe, and until you invest your savers' money in things that are good for the planet rather than detrimental to the planet, and until you lend money to things that have a social purpose rather than just an economic return, until you start to make those things criteria, you are going to be guilty of a degree of greenwash, no matter how well-intentioned your advertising might be.
So the whole ethical component of business has to be enhanced. We've got to get sharper on that. And this is happening even within learning establishments now. More ethics are coming into people who are getting an MBA or a commerce degree. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, there are some business programs now which are teaching this very actively. And at the end of the day, business has to be accountable to its customers. Some organisations, the large global organisations, have become so powerful now, they have such a dominant role internationally, their turnover is greater than the GDP of many countries. And so there is a huge onus on them with that influence to behave ethically, and that absolutely hasn't been the case. And as an advertiser and a marketer, I'm very aware of the role that my own industry has played in the state of affairs that we face socially and environmentally at the moment. Advertising's real strength and growth came in the 1950s when it was American domestic policy to encourage the consumption of consumer household goods. And the real bedrock of the advertising industry was the growth that happened in that phase and the fostering of encouraging people to satisfy their needs by buying things rather than doing other things was quite deliberately fostered out of the advertising industry in those early years and continues now. You know, that creation of a feeling of dissatisfaction, that dissatisfaction can be overcome by purchasing something. The Story of Stuff, which is a free 20-minute movie that anyone can download, is a really great resource, and it takes people through the story and the role that advertising plays in that. And of course, by stimulating demand, advertising has played a major role in changing social behaviours and what's acceptable, and continues to be a really major force in society. But the exciting opportunity there is that we can use it for a force for good. And advertisers and marketers are generally very creative, very clever people. They have influential roles these days in organisations, whether it's an advertising agency or in a large corporate. And increasingly, they're on the boards and having a major influence internally. So if we can harness that overall approach that marketing has, so you know, marketing is not just about the advertising and promotions. Marketing are also responsible for the product development. Marketing is responsible for the packaging that wraps up those products. Marketing is responsible for the ways that product gets to market, whether it's flown by air or whether it's sent on a boat with a sail attached, which can make a huge difference to the fuel economies of that boat. Those decisions are driven largely out of the marketing team. The whole ethics of pricing are driven largely out of the marketing teams and organisations. So whilst we've been accountable for a lot of the rampant consumerism that's dominated recently, as marketers, we've got a massive, exciting opportunity now to help our organisations confront the reality of diminishing resources. We make packaging out of plastic because it's cheap, but it isn't going to stay cheap with oil prices going up for very much longer. So we've got a real opportunity as marketers to be a catalyst for change and good within our organisations and start to map out positive pathways that our companies might take.
And do you find that, say, within the university and also among the city people, the folk in advertising, that you're connecting a lot as a group outside working hours to want to say, yes, we want to be a force for change in this field?
Absolutely. That's really starting to happen over the last year or two in particular. For me, I've been working with companies for quite a while now who've put social and environmental factors as equal, if not more important to them than the financial gain for quite a while. And there's a lot of people in the marketing industry sector who are caring about those things and providing advice to clients who have similar concerns. For example, in my private life, I work as a volunteer for the Green Party, and we've this year formed a marketing strategy group of members of the Green Party who are professional marketers. And so we're connecting to support the Green Party move forward in its efforts. And professionally, I've been increasingly forging connections with a whole range of other people working in agencies and working client side who are marketers and advertisers and who do care about these things. So one of the reasons that I'm thrilled to be doing the tutoring at the University of Auckland is for us to have a forum where we can exchange ideas and spread the word, because it's an emerging area, so it's new, so it's quite hard. We don't have great models laid out for us on how to authentically do green marketing. It's an evolving field, which makes it an exciting field, but also a challenging one. So absolutely, we're forging connections informally at the moment, but I'm hopeful next year to help put something a little bit more formal in place for the green marketers of New Zealand to work in a more united way.
Because New Zealand, of course, we've got our clean green image, which is not true, which we feel.
Have you seen the Attitude New Zealand survey by Perceptive last year? It showed that less than one in four New Zealanders feel they live in a clean green country anymore, and 56% reckon it's decayed, it's less clean and green than it used to be. So you're right, Tim, you know, the myth in New Zealand is recognised as such by most people now.
Well, it is good. We've got to be honest with ourselves. Do you get any support from the government when we look at the Department of Social and Economic Development? Are they interested in making connections with people who want to enhance New Zealand as a tourist destination, as a producer of clean food, as a place where people can experience nature more easily?
I think the current government has a lot of learning to do in this area. I don't think John Key has joined the dots yet between his portfolio for tourism and between what a lot of tourists are coming for, which is that they do believe in the clean green myth. You know, our advertising for many years now has promoted New Zealand as 100% pure, and that plainly isn't the case. You have to look at our water pollution record and our climate change record and our complete dependence on private motor vehicles to get around our cities, and it all starts to stack up pretty clearly. But I think actions speak louder than words, and unfortunately what we've seen since the new government came into power is a scrapping of, you know, one of the very small initiatives the previous Labour administration had done, who were very poor on these things too largely, which was putting recycling bins in public places. Now, at the time, I thought that was a hugely cynical gesture. Clearly, some market research of tourists had shown them that they were dissatisfied that you couldn't come to New Zealand and recycle your bottle when you drunk your water out of it. And as you can pretty much everywhere in Europe, it's just a standard. So they put in place green public recycling bins, but they only put them in high tourist destination areas. They presumably thought New Zealanders wouldn't like to do the same thing. Now, some councils have started to do that. So out at Piha Beach now, we do have recycling bins where you can put in your plastic or your tins or your glass, but that's the real exception. Most places in New Zealand, you just get a litter bin where you have to throw it away and it all goes straight into the waste, and you don't really want to take home your empty bottle all the time. It's not always convenient. So the new government scrapped those public recycling bins. It was a tiny amount of money was being spent on them, but they scrapped them. And also, of course, they're going for a least possible level of action in climate change with the conference coming up in Copenhagen end of this year, which is crazy from an economic perspective. New Zealand exporters and our tourist industry are going to really, really suffer if this government doesn't take a strong proactive stance for New Zealand. It's not about the overall contribution to the world's greenhouse gases that we make in New Zealand. It's about doing our fair share. And it's really important that New Zealand is seen to do our fair share. We're one of the top five worst emitters per capita. So the world is going to be looking for us to do per capita our bit. And we're not planning to do it at the moment under the current government. So I think that companies who export and companies who depend on tourism need to be very, very careful about the impact on our clean green image. There's one thing's for sure. As a brand marketer, I know that if your brand isn't believed internally, sooner or later it starts to become disbelieved externally too. And I think we're seeing the beginning of that now.
We've got some smart people overseas who are looking at the mileage and how much CO2 is burnt off in the production of it. So we've got to be savvy and get out there in front so that we don't lose that chance to be able to get our produce into a market overseas that has got all the credentials of a small ecological footprint.
We really need to wrestle with it and address the reality, you know. I mean, there are cleaner ways of exporting things, but there's some real cynicism already creeping in overseas. Like when I was just up in the UK, the industry I would be wary of in New Zealand at the moment is apple exports, because no matter the fact that we might have scientifically proven that the energy footprint of producing an apple in New Zealand and shipping it to Europe is less than growing an apple in Europe, it just doesn't intrinsically ring true for people. So there are the LOHAS, the Lifestyles of Health and Sustainability people up in the UK, that the 30-40% of people up there who are making purchasing decisions on this are saying, I don't want to buy an apple that's come all the way from New Zealand. It just feels wrong. Yes, it might use less energy because they have more sunshine, but it still doesn't feel like something I want to buy. I want my food to be more locally grown. So we're already starting to see a backlash being articulated, and there seemed to be a little bit of anger almost directed at New Zealand apples and their ubiquity in the UK off-season in supermarkets there. So I think we're starting to see it. Another example is Waitrose, which is a big supermarket chain in the UK, and they take their customers' preference for sustainably produced foods very seriously. And one of the things they've been doing is championing good ethics in terms of ocean fisheries. So they've actually been showing a movie up there to customers about the depletion of the oceans and promoting that movie. And they've also looked very hard at the fish they're importing, and they've stopped stocking New Zealand hoki in Waitrose, because although apparently the New Zealand hoki, according to our industry here, is a sustainable fishery and it's certified as a sustainable fishery from New Zealand, Waitrose have decided that that criteria aren't good enough for them because the hoki fisheries use bottom trawling. And Waitrose have decided that bottom trawling isn't a sustainable way of taking fish from our ocean, and that they are wanting to educate their consumers about this, and they're not prepared to stock bottom trawled hoki anymore, or to stock fish from fisheries where bottom trawling has happened. So those supermarket chains are representing their customers, which is very well, and they're actually voting with their wallets and not taking those fish stocks anymore. So this is the beginning of international pressure and demand that we're going to start seeing, and it's going to reflect on our economy here in New Zealand in a big way over the coming years, and we need to get ahead of the game and face up to that now.
You'd like to think that the Prime Minister and the Cabinet would be discussing exactly what you're talking about and saying, OK, we have to be aware, we've got to position ourselves to be aware of all these different components, because for us as a country, we may find ourselves being in a situation where we don't have the sales that we have been basically planning for. So we've got to rethink our ideas, because I like eating food that is grown locally as well.
Well, the thing is, it takes a lot of courage to face up for this stuff, and I'm just not convinced the current government have got it. They're very focused on what they know, but the world is changing really fast, and it's changing in two really important ways. So customers, people, are demanding ethics in who they buy from. We can see that really clearly in the New Zealand research, and they're increasingly cynical about advertising and messages they're fed. But running in parallel to that, we've got greater access and transparency of information than we've ever known before, thanks to the internet and digital communications. So now I can have no money, but I can either celebrate or condemn your country or your company to thousands of people in seconds for free. Well, I could never do that historically before. But now, using mobile phone networks and using the internet, I can have an amazing access to publish and to celebrate. And we're using new technology, like this very radio station is often shared and celebrated online with people clicking links and sharing them amongst themselves. So we're able to get messages out there for change, and that combination of more concern and more ability to communicate is a really powerful force for change. But I think that it does demand a degree of imagination and a degree of courage to face up to those opportunities and to go, we don't have to see this as a threat. It can be a real positive for us, but we need to be doing the new thinking. We need to be pushing forward into those new areas, and we need to be really honest with ourselves if we're going to take that challenge.
I'm speaking with Kath Dewar on sustainability and also how we need to be far more honest in our dealings with the public in relationship to all products that come out of this country. Kath, you're teaching sustainability at Auckland University. So sustainability, a lot of people haven't got their heads around it yet. I still see people hurl cigarette butts everywhere and catch too many fish and then only gut the fish and throw the fish head away and the backbone. We're not really being conscious what it is to be sustainable. So can you tell us from your standpoint, please?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a tricky word. You know, I'm a Yorkshire girl and I like nice, plain Anglo-Saxon words, and sustainability certainly isn't one of those. It's quite a tricky word. The university offers two short courses through its professional development department. One is how to manage sustainability, and that's been going for a while and is a really successful program. And we introduced the sister course, How to Market Sustainability, this year. So probably wasn't my preferred choice of title, but it worked very well within the overall suite of titles. And one of the problems with sustainability is it's come to mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But when I'm using it in business circles, I use it in the same way that the Sustainable Business Network uses it, which is that to talk about sustaining ourselves as organisations, we also have to sustain the communities that we're part of and be positive forces for those, and to sustain the environment that we draw from and to be a key part of that. So if we're going to be honest about the world, we need to realise that it's three circles, one layered in front of each other, inside each other, and we have one planet, one big circle, which is an environment and a big ecosystem that we're all part of, whether we like it or not. Life on Mars is not yet possible, and so we're confined with a certain set of resources that we can use and reuse, but if we waste them, then they may be gone for a very long time and not accessible to us again. Oil being the classic example. It takes millions of years for oil to form and we burn it up in seconds. And within that, as human beings, we operate in our societies and our villages and our communities and our cities. And then within that, we use economics and the current way of the economy to buy and sell and trade goods. And unfortunately, as people, we've got ourselves into a bit of a crazy situation where the smallest inner wheel, the economy of those three, is driving both our social structure, the future of the health of the planet, the overall ecosystem. So what we really need to do is, first of all, get honest about the way that the economy is just a tool for us to use to manage ourselves and to organise ourselves. And then we need to get realistic about the fact that you can't have an economy which just chews through and uses up scarce resources and spits them out the other end with no regard for the impact that has. So once we start to face up to those couple of things, we start to get our heads around what being sustainable means. And it means living within our means rather than outside them. And at the moment, we're using up the resources that our future generations very well depend on, not just things like oil, but also an atmosphere that supports human life in the far-flung reaches of the globe, which we like to live in these days, and clean water, for example, which we can drink and enjoy. So we're using those things up much, much faster than we're cleaning them, and that takes us on a one-way journey off a cliff in terms of quality of life very fast. So if we think about sustainability rather than thinking of an ongoing trajectory of endless economic growth, instead we need to think of is a circle where we have an economy which is self-replenishing and where we operate within our means. There's no reason to say we can't live well, but we need to not live so wastefully.
Because the challenge is to be able to communicate this. I've talked about this for 5 years since the program was initiated. How do we fire up the imagination of people?
Well, I think we need to recognise that not everyone is motivated by the same thing. So for me, I'm really excited about the response that myself and people like me in the advertising and marketing world are getting when we talk about these things. Because there's a lot of people in the industry who feel quite guilty and quite despondent about the role they've had. And to feel that they can actually play a positive part for change is really inspiring. So I think not everyone's buttons are pressed by the same things. Personally, I'm inspired by it because I love nature in her glory and I want to enjoy that and I want my friends' kids to enjoy that too. So that's my choice and my values, but I don't expect everybody else to necessarily be motivated by the same things. So what a lot of us in advertising are also motivated by is the challenge. It's the next great adventure, is how can we in business terms and in our organisations start to invent things which don't pollute and don't waste. We've got great examples happening around the fringes in quite small ways, but for example, WasBags, which is a New Zealand initiative, and also Paradigm Design, they've taken waste products from the advertising industry, so those old advertising billboards that get put up there, like the wonderful Green Party ones we had last year, and where they can't be reused as advertising, they're cutting them up, making them into bags and laptop carriers, which will last for a really, really long time because they're very robust materials. Now, that's not a perfect solution because those billboard skins are often, not always, but often a very damaging material in their own right. They're not a great product to be having out there, but they're a reality of the current world. So we need to move beyond that and find smart ways of reusing materials where we can and also reducing waste. The Zespri kiwi fruit industry are doing some really great work at the moment. When they process the fruit for export and sale, there's always some damaged fruit and skins and pips and things that don't necessarily make it out the other end of the product, whether it's a manufactured product or whether they're just exporting the fruit. And so what they've started doing with them is providing packaging for the fruit, which is based on the fruit. So they, in the snack food market, kiwi fruit are often sold currently with a little tray and a little plastic spoon for you to eat it as a takeaway product, particularly up in Europe. And so now instead they're making the spoon and the tray out of bits of old kiwi fruit reprocessed into a biodegradable tray and spoon. So they're actually kind of looking at how they could take some of the edges off what they're doing and move away from using harmful products to using products which are a waste product of their own process, but also a natural product which is going to do less harm.
Because people need to hear all the time of all these fantastic initiatives that are happening up and down the country, because it inspires us to think, well, yes, we're making progress. So have you got a few more that you can throw into the mix that'll let people know that we can make a difference?
Absolutely. There's hundreds of examples. One I was really sorry to miss because I was overseas doing my bit to burn the airplane emissions recently. We'll be offsetting, but it's not ideal. And I missed the Langham Hotel's Big Schwab, which they ran. And that was a great piece of green marketing. The Langham Hotel have been very highly recognised for their very strong efforts towards becoming a less environmentally damaging hotel in the city. And to celebrate that and provide an opportunity to come in and check out the hotel, they hosted a Big Schwab, which is an opportunity to make, I guess, wearing secondhand clothes cool, along with the word vintage. And you paid a $10 entry fee and you could take in your clothes that you didn't want anymore and swap them. You got a token for how many you took in and you could use those tokens to swap them for other people who brought in clothes that they didn't want anymore as well, hosted in glamorous surroundings of the hotel. So it's just an example of how a company and a brand like Langham's celebrating our move away from being a high disposal society where we buy stuff up and spit it out again with no disregard to actually thinking, well, how can we share and reuse things and how can we think differently about the role business might play in bringing people together to do that kind of stuff. So sorry I missed it, and I hope they have another one. There are also things like the work that the HB Media team are doing with Good Magazine, where they're not only producing a magazine which is produced with a minimum impact in terms of paper use, but they also have a very strong commitment to giving back and to supporting charities with each edition of subscription, so they give away part of their margin to support a good cause each time. So they're really walking the talk in lots of different ways, and it's been really, you know, really encouraging to see their success and their growth in readership. We're also getting things like the celebration of success happening more and more publicly. So the Sustainable Business Networks are having their national awards this week, which recognises the huge strides that many businesses in New Zealand of all sizes and shapes are making in terms of moving forward. And also a initiative by the Independent and Unlimited called the Sustainable 60, which is going to be recognising again and benchmarking success in businesses who are doing really good things there.
Yes, have you been to Green Drinks?
Yeah, I'm a regular when I can get there. There was a fantastic one this week down at Stevenson and Turner.
I'm missing that one. I blew it. So, David, I can't get there.
Yeah, sometimes it is, but no, it was that was a really great one, and they hosted a great event at Stevenson and Turner, who are architects and engineering company, and who are trying to build as many green buildings as they can, and they use it as an opportunity to profile social energy. They use it as an excuse to profile solar energy and some of the big changes that are being made possible there in countries where solar energy is being supported.
Kath, what you're sharing now is just so exciting, and it's so good for me to hear, and particularly for listeners, to know that there are people out there who are doing so many fantastic things, that good things are happening. It's not been broadcast by the media, and I just want you to carry on and tell us all the good things that are happening here in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure. Most of the really good things are happening when businesses and marketers in those businesses really focus on what impact does their organisation make substantially, and how can they really affect change at that level. So you've got people like Resene Paint, who have recognised that there is still more demand for even less harmful paint than they currently produce. They currently do a really good job. And so they got themselves organised and actually were awarded some funding to help with research and development for a paint which will be one of the least damaging paints available anywhere in the world, which will be a great New Zealand innovation. And they've got funding to take that right through to through research and development into having a prototype product ready for sale. And so they've really looked at the core of what they do and gone, how can we reduce the impact further? And it's not about pretty advertising. It's about getting into product design and doing that really, really well. And you've got organisations like Phoenix Organic Strengths, who use their website to drive aspartame education with their Think Before You Drink campaign. And it's good for their company because it promotes the fact that they don't use artificial sweeteners, which have lots of health concerns, so they have a social implication. But it's also taking an educative role with their consumers, although I think they've missed a marketing trick. They could very easily have made their Think Before You Drink little graphic a Web 2 enabled device that people could share on their Facebook pages, but they've not gone that route yet, but maybe they will in the future. And it's not just large organisations like Phoenix have become who are doing it, but there's a company in Auckland called Tanks A Lot who sell water tanks, and they add value to their sale by talking about how important collecting rainwater and storing water is, and they are really doing a great job to educate their consumers about the preciousness of water and how we can collect and harvest wastewater and harness water rather than wasting it. And there's also good New Zealand advertising initiatives which are being exported now. So we've got the guys down at Tango who built an interactive guide to sustainable building in different climate zones in Australia for an Australian client, the Brick Council, called Think Brick. And so they've taken some New Zealand creativity and added it to the mix of what's happening over in Australia. And you've got organisations like the Carbon Group who have provided sustainable business consulting for quite a while, and they're going, what we really want to do is support smaller businesses in our neighbourhood down in the Victoria Quarter. So they, working in conjunction with Auckland City Council, are now working on helping a whole load of small businesses down in the Victoria Park area of Auckland City to reduce their energy use and to reduce their waste impact and to green up their commute. So there's many, many examples of really great work that's being done. And most of that starts by getting your own house in order in your organisation, and as a marketer, looking at the product, looking at the packaging, looking at the distribution, well before you look at the promotion of what you're doing. And then quite a few of these examples are actually about information leading and championing the change that we want to see. So for quite a long time, Honda in New Zealand have been backing their low emission fleet with advertising that discusses the problem of air quality in Auckland. They had a really striking ad with coal trucks being carted along the motorways of Auckland to make that problem apparent and visual for people. So organisations have a big opportunity to champion the change and to inspire people to behave differently. We just struggle a little bit with some of them, though, like Genesis Energy run some great ads with Pukekos celebrating how you can save energy by turning off power, and they're cute ads. But Greenpeace culture jammed those ads by making their own version promoting Genesis' dark side, which they describe as the fact that they're big producers of greenhouse gases by running coal-fired power stations in New Zealand. So there is a real mix of things to be done, and it's not always easy or straightforward to negotiate through it, which is why being able to work with people coming along to the university and for us to explore that stuff together is a really rewarding part of my work now. So first of all, getting your house in order. Secondly, looking at how, you know, you can inspire the change, and obviously the internet's a really important way that organisations can do it. But, you know, what I'm really, really hopeful of is that in the future we might have a day where the advertising standards don't forbid us from saying that we're environmentally friendly, because there's plenty of organisations out there who one day might be. At the moment, it's hard to imagine how you might have a company or a product or a service which could actually do net good rather than doing net harm. But we're starting in the design industry to start to see some really exciting emerging changes. So we've got people like Janine Benyus's work on biomimicry, where she's working with big organisations like 3M. And instead of using petrochemical-based glues to stick post-it notes to the walls, they're looking at how a gecko sticks its foot to the wall. What are the thousands and thousands of years of research and development that Mother Nature has produced actually taught us that we could learn from? So rather than learning from animals by sticking chemicals in their eyes, let's actually look at how they operate in such a magnificent way and go, well, maybe if we use some of that technology, it would be less impactful. So they're now looking at using the same way that a gecko's foot is designed, which lets it scramble up a wall, a seemingly impossible vertical surface, and use that for how we can stick things more effectively. And the amazing work that Michael Braungart and William McDonough have done in cradle-to-cradle design, where they're thinking, how can we actually think about products not just for their immediate cycle of use, but way beyond that in terms of the way we engineer and put a product together, the components that go into it really determine the whole future of that product for generations to come, and whether it ends up in landfill or whether it can be reused or recycled. So they, from a design perspective, are making some great challenges, which, you know, I really encourage marketers and advertisers to look at. And in building design, Janice Birkeland's work, where she's looking at buildings with beneficial footprints. So Janice architecturally designs buildings so that they produce energy overall rather than consuming energy, that they leave the air and the water around them cleaner than when the air and the water first encountered the building, and so that the building as a whole operates more like a beneficial organism rather than a polluting sink, which is currently where they are. So if we start to think about things differently, we can create amazing changes. There's nothing to say that because we are in business that we have to be inherently harmful. There's a massive opportunity to do inherent good. We just need to think more creatively about it, and we need to recognise that we have a responsibility to society and grief of self-preservation involved, because if we keep using resources at this rate, we just won't be able to keep accessing them anymore. So it's a pretty good carrot and stick approach for us getting on with it, I think.
I'm speaking with Kath Dewar, and I'd like to actually say to you, Kath, your enthusiasm is infectious. So do you want to put it across the airwaves? Because via the airwaves, the carbon footprint is so small, and it just gets to so many people instantly. And so I'd really like you to be able to share where we're going over the next 5-10 years, in your estimation.
Oh, well, I think we've got some really big choices ahead of us, actually, and those are individual choices that we'll all make when we get up every morning, whether we really, really need to get in the car and drive, or whether that particular journey could be one that we walk or cycle or catch a bus or a train for. And they're political choices that we'll make in local government elections in Auckland next year and elsewhere around the country, and that we'll make in the general election the year after that. And they're the decisions that our elected representatives will make for us on our behalf, particularly the commitment that we're going to make to reducing our emissions in New Zealand or not. So I actually think the choices we make in the next month, 6 months, 12 months are going to be really crucial to the path that we take. And it's a pretty big choice. Really, we're going to be making a choice between business as usual, just carrying on the way we have with disregard, and facing increasing economic hardship and social disruption if we do that. And many, many thousands of families in New Zealand really hurt when oil prices climbed very high in early 2008. And they didn't just hurt because it was costing them more to fill up the car. They also hurt because food prices went up. And in fact, they haven't really come down as much as you might think. food prices went up because oil prices had gone up. Now, when the economy fell over at the end of 2008 internationally and we hit this recessionary period, oil demand dropped and it stayed fairly low, but the price has already started to climb back up again. So if we don't start to very quickly make New Zealand less dependent on oil, we're going to see a very big impact in our economic well-being here, which is going to lead to, I think, be big enough to lead to quite a lot of social disruption and unrest potentially as well, because it's very hard to live and work in Auckland and not drive to get to work. You know, unless you're very conscious and you plan to live on a public transport route, our public transport provision here is very weak. And despite the Auckland Regional Transport and Regional Council's efforts, we've not got the funding to change it. And that impacts on business every day. You know, it means that employees get to work tired and stressed because they've had to negotiate rush hour if they're on time, and they may well be late. So congestion and motorway dependency and oil dependency aren't good for business, and they're certainly not good for our families and our well-being, let alone our air quality or our emissions. So choices like, are we actually going to move away from this motorway and oil addiction to a more livable city with cleaner air and better transport, is a decision we need to make really fast, and it's going to impact on us really quickly as oil prices rise again. One of the more scary things is that as oil prices do start to go up again, which we already see they're back up at $84 a barrel, is that we will start to get those economic impacts happening. It'll mean that people pull back on spending again, and we potentially go back into a recession if we're not careful. So that's the last thing anyone wants to think about or hear about at the moment, because a lot of us are kind of keen to just get on with things, but we need to get on with things in a smart way. So we need to make some real choices about the impact of what we do individually and also politically. But the opportunities for change are great. You know, we know the way of fixing a lot of these things. Every marketing person listening in today in their organisation can start by working with their team internally, with their CEO, with their management team, with the owners of the business, and going, what can we do to make a difference? We know that customers want it. You know, we know people say in the research time and time again, we want more, and people are increasingly prepared to pay more, so long as they can see the advantage to it and so long as they can buy it easily. So get the businesses to look at their core issues. Using innovation to unleash staff productivity. It's like the Sustainable Business Network. All the companies they work with don't just report good new products and services out of the work they do, but they also find that the staff who come to work every morning are much more excited and tuned in to what the business wants to do because it's got a whole new focus. And it's often this focus on environmental or social good as well as profit. We're not all just motivated by money. That's a fib. We're actually motivated by doing great things and by being innovative and by doing good to each other, good for each other. So it's really motivating for staff in a team to get to engage with these things and to find out how they can improve service and satisfaction and end up with more customers raving about them. And the companies who do good things spread through great word of mouth, turbocharged by the power of the internet. And there's ways of taking part and sharing with other organisations. So you could look at joining the Sustainable Business Network or working with someone like Landcare who can help you put in place good programmes to make sure that you've got a robust system in place and make really authentic, demonstrable change internally. Once you kind of got that happening internally, there's the opportunity to inspire customers and to take them on a change journey. And potentially, as we've said, to actually look at how we can re-engineer each of our organisations to do good overall rather than to do harm overall. So I'm hopeful that we'll start to make those decisions in everything we buy and the actions we do as individuals, that that's a translate through to more and more businesses being inspired to make a difference, and that we send really loud signals to our politicians that we want these things taken seriously. Because if we don't, we could end up with a really damaging cycle for our quality of life here in New Zealand. We touched earlier on the risk to our exports, and that's a really real risk. Information flows really fast around the world these days. Quite surprised that we've kind of got away with as much as long as we have. I talked to quite a few other fellow migrants in my travels, and whether they come from the UK like I do or from Singapore, quite often New Zealand's clean green reputation is one of the things that's drawn them here. But when you live here more than just coming on a 3-week holiday, you really do start to see that we don't live up to that reputation at all. And we've got no excuse. We've got a massive opportunity to do it and to do it well. So at both that macro level internationally, the way we conduct ourselves as a country, and in our homes, the nurturing or the wasteful way we choose to act, all of those things will make a difference. And if we don't get it right, then we'll start to feel the pain in many, many ways. Firstly, we'll feel it economically. We'll struggle along here in New Zealand becoming poorer because we're more dependent on more expensive oil imports all of the time. And we'll start to feel it because our export sector will be less attractive, and we'll start to feel it because we'll be less attractive to tourists, both because we won't be seen as a clean, green destination to come to anymore, but also because they know full well that to get here, realistically, they're going to be flying, and air travel is increasingly becoming as socially unpopular as SUVs are in the UK. So more and more people are choosing not to make long-haul trips. So we'll start to feel it in those core areas as well. And we've got a big opportunity instead to future-proof ourselves, to celebrate the change that's happening and to see it as a massive opportunity to do good and become trailblazers in our fields, whether that's in our own community by joining up friends and neighbours to share power tools rather than buying them, or whether it's in a city-wide sense, the way we plan and organise ourselves, whether it's internationally in the role that New Zealand chooses to play, or whether it's in our workplace where we go in. And, you know, I'm certainly hoping there's going to be a few more advertisers and marketers next year joining forces to lead some of this change.